Whether it's a midweek game on the continent or a big weekend clash, cash in with your soccer knowledge on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match of up to $100. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 long seasons of exile in the National League. Dedicated staff and passionate supporters celebrate the city's return to glory, the big time, all while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in that higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One's promised land? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu. You're listening to the Men in Blazers Media Network. Suboptimal Radio. Manchester United announced that they were finally reforming their women's team after 13 years of dormancy, and they offered you the job of manager.
We hit the ground running. We started against Liverpool, who were in a team in a division above, and we managed to win. And then we opened our first game and we won 12-0, and I still wasn't happy with what we'd done.
You're that manager. It's Guardiola-esque. It's Rog back with another episode of The Women's Game, presented by Paramount Plus. A very special episode, because joining me today, I have a true legend of the game, a human being whom I've long admired. She's trailblazed an extraordinary pioneering path, from Chelsea hopeful to England captain to world-renowned manager. And you may know her by her game day fits, her iconic cooler sitting, her defensive prowess, or in the present day, as an unparalleled master of startup leadership, an unstoppable head coach of your top-of-the-table first-year sensation that is the San Diego Wave. It's a joy to welcome Casey Stoney.
Hey, Rog, how are you?
Oh, Casey, it is such a joy to have you join us on the pod today. Euro 2022 is about to kick off, and there's few who understand the seismic growth of the women's game in Europe in this moment better than you. We'll talk about those tectonic plates shifting over there in just a second, as well as your own remarkable career. I can't tell you how elated I was when the Wave announced you as head coach last summer. But how's the San Diego lifestyle matching up to the one you enjoyed in that magical kingdom of Manchester?
Well, it's certainly sunnier. I don't need an umbrella. Listen, I'd be really honest and candid. I'd never even been here before I kind of explored the job. I'd heard so many positives about it. I know people that have been on honeymoon here, people that have been on holiday, but to come and live here, it's a dream come true. It is one of the most incredible places I've ever been in my life.
It's amazing from an urban perspective. It's amazing from a footballing perspective, and we will dig in and more. But I want to go all the way back to the beginning, because there's so many pieces of your story that are truly remarkable. You grew up in Essex, the heart, the proper south of England. And from age 5 to 10, you played football with boys, like a lot of women in England who didn't have girls' teams in their towns growing up. And for Americans listening, we have to make clear just how different being a girl who loved football was back then in the United Kingdom. We had Emma Hayes on a couple of weeks ago, and she talked about how women's football was really peripheral in a deeply misogynistic culture, seen as an outside pursuit. And you've talked about how opponents and their parents would bully you for being a girl, accuse you of not being a girl because you were so bloody good. Parents telling their kids to foul you extra hard. I mean, that kind of formative experience, it's got to shape you.
It certainly makes you resilient, that's for sure. I didn't even play organised football until I was around 10 or 11. The way I played from 5 to 10 was in the street, jumpers down for goals, and I lived in a cul-de-sac. So, yeah, there was one team in the town where I lived, boys team, couldn't play in it because I was a girl. So, yeah, it was certainly a challenge, but it shaped me, it made me. I think playing with the boys helped me with my ability, resilience, ability to move the ball, read the game, be tough, and started on my journey to prove people wrong.
You moved to London when you were 10, and by 12 years of age, you were scouted by Chelsea women. And I love this. They wanted you to play with the senior team immediately. Players were supposed to be at least 14. So they'd use a fake date of birth on all your registration forms to get you into games.
Yeah, that's very true. And the sad part is, at that point, Chelsea didn't have a girls' youth team. So we had a senior first team and a senior reserve team. I couldn't even get there. So my manager used to have to pick me up and drop me off because mum worked a lot. But yeah, we changed the date of birth. Luckily, I was quite tall and I was reasonably good. But going in a dressing room full of grown women was daunting. But you see the positives. I always had a lift because I could all drive.
God, you were English Olivia Moultrie before there was Olivia Moultrie. But it's hard to imagine a team getting away with that for very long now in the internet age. But it was mid-90s. And women's football in England looks so bloody different than it does now. When you moved over to the mighty Arsenal at 16, is it true that you had to work in the laundry washing the men's kits as a part-time job? Because few details better capture the status of women's football back then.
Yeah, very true. And I moved from Chelsea to Arsenal because Chelsea weren't in the top league then. Arsenal were. I just made it into England, like under 18s, and I wanted to progress. And Hope Powell at the time said I needed to be playing at a higher level. Hope Powell was the England manager, and Hope Powell didn't only manage the senior team, she also managed the under 18s and under 16s at that point because she managed the whole programme. So I went to Arsenal. And the bonus about going to Arsenal was it was the first time I didn't actually have to pay to play, and we didn't have a lot of money. You know, not having to play was important. I didn't get paid. So, you know, I wasn't great educationally. I had a lot of challenges and fell out of education. So for me to earn money, I worked in the laundry at the training ground, washing the men's kit on a daily basis. So it meant I could get cash in an envelope. It could get me by and I could play the game I loved. We trained 3 nights a week, 8 till 10. So in the evenings, and I worked during the daytimes.
You went on to have a long, truly epic club career as a player. Arsenal, Charlton Athletic, Chelsea, Liverpool, an enormous trophy haul. I think 14 by my count, including 2 league titles, 4 FA Cups. But I think casual fans and many Americans who didn't have access to the English League in those days will remember you best from your time leading the England national team. That momentous Euro final in 2009, which although England ended up losing to Germany, really felt like a springboard for everything the English women have achieved in the decade plus since. 3 World Cups, including 2015's third place finish, and a truly breakthrough moment for women's football in Britain. The 2012 Olympics, where you captained the Great Britain team on home soil with an exclamation point through the group stage journey, including a famous 1-0 win against Brazil at Wembley in front of a 70,000 person crowd. And having grown up in Britain as a girl who loved football and who got bullied for that love, can you describe that moment of leading the great British team out at an Olympics at the spiritual home of football, Wembley Stadium?
Yeah, I absolutely can, because it's a moment that will live with me forever and you can't buy memories like that. I remember standing in the tunnel and I remember going to the game on the coach, and we had an idea there'd kind of be about 30, 40,000, and my partner rang me and just got off the tube. And she was like, I can't believe what it's like here. It's like a men's cup final. And I was like, I don't need to hear this. I've got a game to play. I'm trying to keep calm. So we pull in underneath Wembley and we go in. You can realise there's quite a few people there. So when I was stood in the tunnel about to walk out, I remember kind of going out the tunnel and it just erupted. The chants of Team GB, the stadium was incredible. It lit up. And I remember kind of every hair on my body standing up on end, just being like, wow. Like, and I'd been to cup finals and watched men's cup finals there. Never, ever dreamt that I'd ever play at Wembley. Didn't even think it was a possibility. So when I went out that day, I was like, do you know what? Everything I've done, every challenge I've had, every barrier I've had to face, every bit of hard work, it was so worth it just for that moment. And the fact that I was playing against Marta and I was like, right, okay, I'm a centre back. She's the best centre forward in the world. I'm going to have my A game today. And I take things on like that. I'm like, okay, so you're good. I need to show you that you're not as good as what everyone's saying. We need to keep a clean sheet. And we managed to win 1-0. And it was just the most electric night that I'd ever experienced in my career. And it was a privilege to be part of.
There's one thing about you that I think we tend to forget, given how much of an established, self-assured presence you are in the coaching area these days. You're still quite new as a manager, all things considered. You only retired from playing in 2018. Jodie Taylor, whom you now coach at San Diego, was playing with you in the WSL just 5 years ago. And thinking back to 2018, 4 years ago, when you decided it was time to retire, age 35, after 19 incredible years as a professional, can you take us into that moment, that decision, that feeling?
I hadn't been in education, so I've actually been coaching since I was 16. So I'd kind of had 19 years at it by that point. And I got to a point where my body was breaking down. I couldn't even play in the 2017 Euros because I had injury after injury, and I ended up going to the tournament and being on new sub. And, you know, Phil Neville came in after Mark Sampson, the previous England manager, and he gave me the opportunity to potentially keep playing and go on the coaching staff. And I'd got to a point where my body just wasn't wanting to do it anymore. I was finding myself having to really raise myself for games, which is unheard of. It was the best day of the week, and I got to a point where I was like, I have to raise myself. I was playing against Lauren Hemp, who's one of the England internationals. She was playing for Bristol at the time, and I'm like, oh, can't let this little one get the better of me. But having to raise myself to perform. And he offered me the opportunity to do both, because I think he was really smart in terms of, he was coming out of the men's game, had never had experience in the women's game. He wanted somebody I'd been in the England setup for 18 years, you know, so he wanted someone who knew the setup to be on the staff and kind of be that go-between between the players and staff, which naturally I was that person anyway, even when I was playing, because I'd been England captain. Even when I wasn't England captain, I was in all the leadership groups. I helped the managers in terms of that piece of like keeping the players connected to the manager. But I'm a person that doesn't believe that I can do the best of both to my ability in terms of like playing and training and doing that. And I was like, if I'm going to do this, I want to do it properly. I want to give it absolutely everything. I felt I was ready. I was also absolutely terrified, because it was everything I'd known for 19 years. It was my identity. It was my income. You know, now I was a professional. I was going to potentially, if I didn't get a job, lose my income, all of my income overnight. I had children. I had three children. So we relied on my income. So it was terrifying and very, very emotional, because I was losing a part of me and losing a part of what I absolutely loved, and losing that locker room, that competitiveness. But I also knew that coaching and management was the next best thing, and maybe I could have an even bigger impact as a head coach and as a manager on the game, which I'm hugely passionate about. So, yeah, I made the decision to retire, went on the staff. So I went into one camp as a player with England, and I came back as the next camp as a member of staff. So it was a transition, but I think the biggest compliment I got was, it feels like you've always done this, by one of the players.
And you knew in your mind, as you made that transition, it was always going to be coaching for you. That was always your next step vision.
I'd set myself up. So I did my level two when I was 16, my level two licenses, did my level three. I coached full time at the Beckham Academy. I'd coached head coach at Chelsea. I was the head coach of the Chelsea Ladies Academy. I'd done all of the centre of excellences for the youth teams that I'd played senior team football for. I coached all of their youth teams. I went on and done my A license. I've now done my pro license. I was preparing for it my whole life, to be honest, whilst I was still playing.
And that preparation soon shone through. You joined Phil Neville's backroom on the England women's national team, and it didn't take very long for you to get a role all of your own, because just 4 months later, Manchester United announced that they were finally reforming their women's team after 13 years of dormancy, and they offered you the job of manager. And what I find incredible about you taking that job, Casey, you were hired in June and the season started in August. You were designing an entire team from scratch. You literally had a matter of weeks to build a backroom staff, a 21-player roster, an encompassing club philosophy, really under tech startup conditions. And you'd never truly managed a team before, never mind built one. And it was incredible to watch you just fling together from the outside. I'm sure it didn't feel like that from the inside. A WSL quality team from nothing in 2 months. What was that experience like? Where did that confidence come from?
Well, it was stressful, I'm not going to lie. Obviously, when I first heard about Manchester United bringing a women's team, Phil Neville was an ex-Manchester United player. So he was the one that was like, this is going to happen. I asked permission, can I put my name in my hat? Because I wanted the day-to-day. I wanted to go on a steep learning curve. I wanted the challenge. I wanted to do that. So I had to interview. I went to Old Trafford and I interviewed. If I'm really honest, probably just going through the experience, never thinking I'd get the job, because there was so many high-caliber managers going for the job. I think the fact that I had so much experience within the women's game in this country, the fact that I'd already knew who I was going to target because I knew who was out of contract, a lot of my friends. So I knew a lot of connections in the, especially in the Liverpool team, and I picked them off. And I say I had just over four weeks, to be honest, to get my backroom staff and get my 21 full-time staff. And I was going on holiday in that time as well. And that was, I couldn't cancel my holiday, otherwise I'd have probably been single. So
how was that vacation for you, Casey?
Oh, stressful. So I was on phones. Before I went on holiday, I was on trains, I was in cars, I was meeting agents, I was meeting players. Even before I got announced as having a job, I was already having phone calls. I already knew who I was going to target. I wanted a relatively young team that we could grow with, and that's where we targeted. We wanted to get young players with a mix of experience, hence why I brought in Siobhan Chamberlain, I brought in Amy Turner. They were both had senior international experience at England, had played in the FAWSL, Alex Greenwood. And I feel really privileged that those players entrusted me to go down a division to come back up again. And I set a very clear vision from the offset that we're not here to make up the numbers. We're not here just to get promoted. We are here to win the league, and we're here to make sure we set ourselves up to be able to compete in the FAWSL from the start. So it was very, very stressful 4 weeks. I was very fortunate, word of mouth. I got some great staff in, some of the best, but we were limited. I didn't even have an analyst for the first year. So I was doing head coach and doing the analyst position as well. So we hit the ground running. We started against Liverpool, who were in a team in a division above, and we managed to win. And then we opened our first game and we won 12-0, and I still wasn't happy with what we'd done.
You're that manager. It's Guardiola-esque. You were at United for 3 years all told, and it's incredible what you managed to accomplish in that time. Promoted from the Championship into the Women's Super League after your first season, top four finishes in the next two, League Cup semi-finalist 2019-2020. And I remember reading an article a couple of years ago that proclaimed Casey Stoney is the first manager since Alex Ferguson who really understands United. There was just a general feeling that your team was on the cusp of going next level, but then you decided to walk away at the end of last season. How tough was that decision?
One of the hardest decisions I've ever made in my life. My heart and soul was invested into that team. I'd grown it from nothing. I had incredible people around me. I had a fantastic group of players that I was massively invested in, cared about, had built relationships with. I felt like we were going in the right direction, and I had to make that decision for them, for the better of the game, despite, you know, it breaking my heart at the time. And I felt it was a decision that I had no choice with, for the better of the team, for the better of the game, to get the club to kind of wake up a little bit, if I'm honest. And it was a difficult decision for me, very, very difficult. You know, I still follow what they're doing now. I've got a huge investment into the players there. And it was, yeah, it took me quite a while to move forward from emotionally, but I'm very much about, I always look at my children, and can I look my children in the eye, and can I say to them every day that I'm making decisions that impact their future for the better? And that was a decision I had to make for my little girls, to try and give them the same opportunities as my little boy.
God, I love that. And in came San Diego, who gave you an entire year to get the club up and running, which you must have felt like, wow, whole year. That's a relaxed, leisurely process compared to the United experience. But it is a remarkable opportunity the San Diego way presented you with, in terms of support, infrastructure, ambitions, the desire to build a globally revered club that will, on September the 17th, a date in my diary, thousands of footballers' lovers' diaries across America, playing in a brand new, state-of-the-art, 35,000-seat Snapdragon Stadium. What a home that is going to be. I'm fascinated, as you thought through the opportunity in a city, as you say, you had never been to, was the one specific thing that fully sold you on coming over, or was it just the sum of the club's ambition?
Yeah, it was. I found a club that matched my ambition, and I thought that was really important. I thought that it was going to be a very special project. Let's not forget, I've never been part of, as a player or as a manager, part of a club that is just has a women's team, that is building a training ground just for the women's team, that has pitches just for the women's team, where we don't have to wait for the under 8s, 9s, 10s, 12s boys to get in the gym or use a grass pitch. And you constantly felt second best. And I've always felt like that as a player. I've played for clubs where we couldn't even use the swimming pool because it was the men's swimming pool, even at 8 o'clock at night when the men had left. And when you're constantly told that as a woman, it can become really, really tiring that you are second best, you're not allowed, you're not permitted. And when I spoke to Jill Ellis, obviously she's a massively successful head coach over here, and you know, and she was going to be president and someone that, you know, I look up to and would be someone I could, you know, kind of mentor me in this role as well. And when I spoke to her and the ambitions of the club and the support that I was going to have and the resources, you know, it's unparalleled to anything I've experienced as a player or as a coach. So to be able to come here again and build something from scratch and put my footprint on it and in a different culture, it was going to challenge me. We had to build the team differently, expansion drafts, college drafts, very, very different experience for me. And I wanted to be stretched. I wanted to be challenged. I wanted to come here, and I'm told it's a transitional league and that players don't like to be coached and these are the types of environments. And I'm like, well, they don't have to be that way. You know, we can create a different environment. Players do want to be coached. They do want to learn. They do want to develop. And we can do something really special here that's different. And I think we've set out to do that. I think we're on track. I think if people speak to our players, they have a very positive learning environment. And, you know, that's what we're going to continue to do.
I mean, I'm fascinated by what you're saying. First of all, the NWSL is a unique environment in the world of football with the college drafts you mentioned, expansion drafts, in-season transfers. It's also a very different game than the one that's being played in Europe right now. It's very physical in comparison, very transitional. And coming in for the English League, is the one thing about the NWSL that really took you by surprise?
The pace, if I'm honest, the pace and the athleticism. Like, there's not many leagues you feel like you can score and concede in the same phase of play, you know, and it don't get me wrong, that's stressful and it's going to make me go grey very early. But at the same time, you know, I've had to really think about our transitional approach both for and against, and how we set up behind the ball, our stretcher becomes really important. And also what took me by surprise is how open-minded the players are and how much they want to be coached and want to be developed. And if I'm honest, you know, I've said it and I've spoken to my players, the college game doesn't prepare them for professional games. So those players, and we took on a lot of rookies coming out of college, first year rookies, we took them out the draft and some weren't drafted and we still took them on. And we've got 9, I believe, that's quite a high amount in our squad. And we're giving them opportunities. We're giving them more playing opportunities than most other teams. But we also know we've got to go on a journey with them because we've almost got to take a year to prepare them for the professional game because they only play a 3-month season in college. You know, they don't have a lot of contact time. Now we're bringing them here in a professional environment, day to day. The expectations are high. I drive standards every day too. You know, I believe in high challenge and high support. So it's a new experience for them. We're going on a journey. We want to make sure that they have the right support. And we've put things in place here for players to be able to perform. And we look after them holistically. And that's everything.
And I'm fascinated, that's on the physical side, but mentally, you are celebrated, Casey Stoney, as a manager who has the ability to instill competitiveness into your teams right from the word go, which is something we've watched play out in real time over the first couple of months of this NWSL season with the Waves' truly remarkable start. You create environments where players are always on the front foot, always striving to be better, and part of that is training and tactics. But how do you foster that kind of environment from an emotional side?
Well, I tell you what, competitiveness here is something that doesn't need harvesting. It's unbelievable. That is one big difference, like the competitiveness of the American player or the American person. Because let's be honest, for one job here, there's 10,000 people going for it. You know, so even in, you know, one place in college, and they've grown up in an environment where they're pushed constantly. They have to strive to be better. Everything's about being the best. I just needed to kind of foster that. I needed to bring that out more and, you know, and encourage it. And also, I've brought a well-being and performance coach with me that I had at Manchester United. It's Lorna Harkin. She likes to work in the background. She'll be annoyed I've said her name, but she's amazing at what she does. And, You know, she's very big believer in like work in silence and let your success be your noise. And she does an awful lot to support both players and staff. It was a non-negotiable for me as taking the job, because she comes in, she supports the players from a mental and well-being perspective, because there's a lot of expectations and pressures on these players. People are coming from lots of different backgrounds with lots of different challenges. They've got different characters, how we support them. And I'm a massive believer in what's going on up here is the difference between the best and the rest. And if we can look after them psychologically, we get the very, very best out of them.
Everyone in life needs a Lorna Harkins. And I've got to ask you, between you and me, were you expecting to be leading the league in a way you have been this early in the club's existence? Or was it surprised even you?
Not really. I think I always set out to be ambitious and to get the team to be competitive. We obviously had the Challenge Cup, you know, which was early on in our season, and we had some difficult moments in that, which we needed, you know. And if you look at our team in the first game of the Challenge Cup to now, we're improving all the time. Are we where we want to be? No, we've still got loads to do. We've got lots of improvements to make. But I have to be incredibly proud of how open this group has been to learning, how coachable they are, how competitive they are, how much information they take on. And every single day they want to grow, they want to learn, and they want to improve. We've also got a really, we're kind of almost halfway through now, and the second half of the season is going to be even more difficult for us. So we need to stay on top of things, keep driving standard. If we end up in playoff places, we would have had a really good season. But my players and me are saying, how do we stay where we are now?
We're going to pivot in a minute, because I do want to leave some time to talk about England and the Euros. But I would be remiss if I didn't ask Alex Morgan, 11 goals on the season for the club so far, playing some of the best, most consistent football, particularly on a club level, that we've all seen in a number of years. This, after becoming a mother, the remarkable Charlie by her side. Did you have any conversations ahead of the season, either with your backroom staff or with Alex herself, about how to unleash that pure talent again? Or is this just Alex feeling great and letting it rip?
Well, I've had lots of conversations coming over here with various coaches that had worked here in the league to gain an understanding of the league and also the American player. I did have a conversation with Rhianne Skinner, who was Alex Morgan's manager at Tottenham Hotspur in the WSL, to gain an understanding there. And I also had a conversation with Alex, because she's the most important person in this. Like, what does she want? What does she need? What does she effectively need from me to be the best that she can be? And how does she work best in terms of management? But this is Alex having consistency. This is Alex being healthy. This is Alex working hard. This is Alex being coachable. And, you know, she's got a higher purpose now. She's got a little girl too, you know, so she's very much about that too. So this is all credit to Alex, you know. And also, she'll feel like she was maybe left out of the US squad and she had a point to prove, but she's happy, she's healthy, she's playing consistently, and she's performing so well. And she's took on that leadership role in this team unbelievably.
I don't want to project. When you say that higher purpose, a little girl, as a mother, can you give me a sense of that? Because I think there's something deep and rich and beautiful in that.
When I was playing, you have a why. And my why was always like, how can I be better to change my circumstances and my life? When my children were born, my why changed massively and it became everything about them. How do I make myself better every day? A, to give them a better future. And that's not just financial. That's how do I give them a better future in society? How do I give my little girls the opportunity to walk out there and be my little boy's equal? And how do I, you know, encourage my little boy every day to see them as an equal? And being in my role, I have a responsibility and a platform every single day to make sure that I'm role modeling those behaviours. My little boy's favourite players are Megan Rapinoe and Alex Morgan and Cristiano Ronaldo in equal measures. And he talks about them in equal measures. So, you know, just doing that, he will see his sisters as equal and capable of doing exactly what he does. And that higher purpose for me is about changing the game for the better, so that, you know, if every little girl picks up a ball, they just have the same opportunity as any little boy.
God, I love your son. That is the future I want to live in. But at the same time, he needs to know that's Rose Lavelle Erasure.
Paramount Plus is your choice for championship soccer.
A messy tour de force!
Streaming the best teams and biggest stars in America and around the world.
Giant stars, huge action.
From UEFA Champions League and Serie A.
Weston McKennie!
NWSL and the CONCACAF World Cup qualifiers.
A milestone moment for the United States!
Plus the best action from South America and Asia.
Oh my, what a goal!
So how do you choose from so many champions? You don't have to. This is the best of CBS Sports. Streaming on Paramount Plus.
There's so much brilliant football as we come down to the stretch of the Premier League season. But if you're a Premier League neutral who wants a little bit of that title race excitement, check out Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can get in on the action and win up to 100 times your cash. Prize Picks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across our nation, including California, Texas, and Georgia. You just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projected stats, and place your entry. It's that easy. You can also mix and match players from several leagues across the globe, as well as other sports like basketball and hockey. That's right, Prize Picks. Essentially a utopia where polysport action can live and breathe. I'm talking Washington Caps, Everton, and Chicago Bulls action all at once in the face. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code MIB. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. It's Rog here to tell you about a product that I simply adore. It's been a long time staple in the Bennett refrigerator. Stoke cold brew coffee. Always bold, always smooth. Yes, that is the very same Stoke as in the mighty Wrexham fortress known as the Stoke Kairas or the Stoke Racecourse, Wrexham AFC's home. They support it. They support football, which is just one great reason to love this coffee. It is my go-to enjoy during the football calendar, essentially the opposite of Everton. And you can check out their full lineup of 48 ounce cold brew products, something for everybody, from light to dark roast to seasonal favorites in a refrigerated multi-serve format. I tell you this as someone whose blood type is now officially Stoke espresso blend. Have the coffee house experience in the comfort of your own home and do it now. Stoke cold brew coffee, and be sure to follow Wrexham AFC. Big love to all at Stoke. Courage. But to the Euros, and we're taping this on the precipice of a glorious month of European football hosted in England. And right off the bat, Casey, you are a lioness at heart. I know this Euros is so important to you. I know also that you are an incredibly busy manager in the middle of your first season in NWSL. Will you be limiting your viewing to just the England games, or will you be consuming as much of that tournament as possible?
I think as a head coach, I'll be consuming it because I need to look at recruitment too. So I'm still looking at who, you know, who we want to bring in from a European market. I am absolutely a lioness in my blood, in my heart, and I want them to do so well.
This year's Euros is being described as the most competitive edition of the tournament the women's game has ever seen. 16 teams, so many of them with a genuine ability to threaten for that title. Netherlands coming in as defending champions. Denmark, runners-up in 2017. Sweden, who made the Olympic final last year. Always strong French and German sides. Italy, a dark horse. Norway, a renewed threat with Ada Hegerberg reinstalled in their roster. The rise of the Spanish league over the past couple of years have boosted Spain into true world contenders. And of course, England, who though I'm nervous to even speak it out loud, come into the tournament somewhat as favourites. You know a lot of these players. You know a lot of these teams, both from your time as a player, your time as a manager. Can you handicap the draw for us a little bit? Because thinking back to the 2017 edition, which you played in, England reaching the semi-finals, knocked out by the Netherlands en route to the title. Does this feel like a different class of challenge?
The game's in a different place. You know, you look at most leagues across the Europe now, they're full-time. So it's no coincidence that it's going to be more competitive than ever. You know, I managed a Spanish player on a back day who was at Manchester United, and she's an incredible talent. And I think Spain, for me, if you look at Barcelona and the denseness of the Spanish players in that team, they are incredible. The way they manipulate and move ball and the way they can control the game, it's whether they can really hurt people in the final third and whether they can keep clean sheets. Because sometimes, you know, you look at Barcelona versus Lyon in the Champions League final, they struggled defensively, you know. So those same centre-backs will be playing in this tournament, and it's whether they can keep clean sheets and defend. I think you can never count France out. You know, I think France have an unbelievably talented front line. You look at Diani and players like that who can score goals out of nothing. But you have to maybe put England up there as favourites. I think that dressing room, knowing some of those players, Lucy Bronze, players like that, they will be going into this tournament with the belief they can win, with an expectation that they can get all the way. They've got a group that you know, probably is slightly easier than some of the other groups. And I don't like to say that because you shouldn't take anything for granted. But if you look at seeding, slightly easier than other groups. So, you know, if they can win all three games, build confidence, build momentum going into the knockout rounds, they've got a really good chance. But there's always dark horses that come out of this tournament, and it will be the team that probably concedes the less goals that will really go far. England have got now a good amount of caps in their team. They've got good experience, got a good blend of youth and experience. Ultimately, I think the key to it is they've got a manager that's done it before, and she's won it in a home Euros, and that experience is so valuable.
Who's the biggest obstacle in your mind?
I still think Germany are in a bit of a transition moment, so I don't think they will be as what they should be in the previous. You know, they've won, I think, 7 European Championships previously. And when I used to play against Germany, you knew you were in a game. But I think the biggest obstacle, if I'm honest, I think will be England themselves. Can they perform on the biggest stage in front of a sellout crowd? Can they keep clean sheets? And if they can keep clean sheets, you know, deny goal scoring opportunities, they've got enough players out there can score goals.
I will say, watching England, they have gone next level under Serena Wiegmann, who took over just in September. There's winger Lauren Hemp. What a lethal talent she is. I'm still quaking over the unreal angle she produced to score against Chelsea in the FA Cup final back in May. Casey, is this the year, do you think, that football's coming home?
I really hope so. I think I'll be the biggest fan cheering them home. And I think they're absolutely capable of winning this tournament, and I think it could springboard the game in England. And I think that visibility piece is huge. Serena Wiegmann, she is the England manager, used to be the Dutch manager, has already won a Euros with them at home. So I'm really, really hopeful, and she's the right person, I think, that can take England to European glory. I think they showed a side to them in the second half against the Dutch game the other day when they won 5-1, that they're capable of scoring goals and going all the way. So they've got some special talent. You mentioned Lauren Hemp. Like, she's unplayable when she's at her best. I think Beth Mead's in good form. I think they've got a really good, you know, solid midfield. It's whether they can keep clean sheets, you know, and I think Serena, you know, previously has kept clean sheets with her previous Dutch team. She knows how to do that. And, you know, I think if they can keep more clean sheets than the opposition, then they're going to win games. You know, they've got, Lucy Bronson's got so much experience now. You know, most of these players have either played Champions League, they've played European Championships, they've been involved at some level. And, you know, you look at the captain, Leah Williamson, she's still young, she's maybe inexperienced as a captain, but I played with Leah as a very young player at Arsenal. And I said back then, she's a super talent. She's so composed, so calm, and she'll keep that team in a place that's, you know, very focused on where they want to go. And it'll be game by game, and it'll be performance by performance. If they can build momentum, absolutely they can win this.
There was an article in The Guardian last week entitled 10 Years That Changed the Face of Women's Football in England, from the 2012 Olympics to next month's sold-out Euros. The game has made great strides. This was the subtitle, but it finished by saying there is still so much to do. And Casey, you were part of that 2012 Olympics, really a legacy moment. You walked out to 70,000 people packed into Wembley. Where are you in your thinking of the women's game in England, in its development, between those great strides and between those great challenges that lie ahead? What do you see?
Well, I have to be immensely proud of where the game's come to. I used to wear men's kits that were too big, play on park pitches that had dog poo and pay to play. So you look at it now and you go, wow, like, Sky Sports are showing games. The attendances are sold out for the Women's European Championship. The Barcelona crowds, the crowds consistently, even here at San Diego, we're an expansion team. We sell out nearly every week. So we're on a bit of a crest of a wave, really. And I think we need to really make the most of this momentum. If England can win, it's how we capitalise off the back of that tournament. For me, the biggest challenges are attendances as well, because you can sell out for a European Championship, but how do you turn that into consistent attendances at club games? You know, during COVID, I remember watching the Men's Premier League and thinking, God, this is dull, because there was no atmosphere. And that's sometimes what you feel within women's games. If there's no atmosphere, that comes out on the TV. And I think if we get more attendances, more bums on seats, we've still got challenges. Also, we've got a very big disparity between the top, top clubs and the clubs that are slightly lower down the leagues in terms of resources and finances and investment and sponsorship. So, you know, we've still got a lot of challenges to bring more money into the game. And if we continue to grow it on the pitch, I think it'll drip down off the pitch.
I say this every week, I can't say it enough. CEOs of major brands, get into women's football now. Get in. The game needs you. You will be rewarded and then some. But listen, and you also, bums, get on seats. Just listen to Casey Stoney.
Paramount Plus is your choice for championship soccer.
A messy tour de force!
Streaming the best teams and biggest stars in America and around the world.
Giant stars, huge action.
From UEFA Champions League in Serie A.
Weston McKennie!
NWSL and the CONCACAF World Cup qualifiers.
A milestone moment for the United States!
Plus the best action from South America and Asia.
Oh my, what a goal!
So how do you choose from so many champions? You don't have to. This is the best of CBS Sports. Streaming on Paramount Plus.
This episode is sponsored by Audible, the home of storytelling. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalogue. Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. I'm currently listening to The Secret Hours by Mick Herron. That's the standalone prequel to the majestic Slow Horses television series. I can't stop listening. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500. That's audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know, with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba, and booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know, kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Casey, I've got to ask you. ESPN came out this week with a list of the top 50 best women's footballers in the world right now. And from an American perspective, it was, let's just say, somewhat sparse. Only one American in the top 10, the majestic Kat Macario, who plays a club football in Lyon. Rose Lavelle was the next at number 19. And for so long, it's felt like American players were in a league above, a league of their own, and Europe was playing catch up. But now it feels like that gap has officially closed. We are on the cusp of the Euros, an incredible Euros, the greatest Euros of all time. Are the United States going to be shocked, do you think, come World Cup next year by the quality of the European teams they're going to face?
I've been speaking for a couple of years on that Europe is catching up, because America was so dominant because of their athleticism, because, you know, they would have 3 or 4 month residencies before World Cups and major tournaments, and all the other leagues in the world were part-time. So America would just overrun teams, outrun teams. They would outcompete, whereas most teams in Europe now are full-time. The athleticism has gone up. So I think there is that gap is closing. And also, you know, America at the moment aren't playing top opposition. You look at the games they're playing recently, Uzbekistan, Colombia, they're not tier one opposition. So if you don't prepare for a World Cup by playing tier one opposition, when you get to a World Cup, it's going to be a challenge that you've not faced. Some of these players haven't been capped against tier one opposition, and they're going to throw them into a World Cup. So I think that is a challenge.
We are living in remarkable days for women's football. You have lived a remarkable journey in which you yourself have propelled the game in multiple continents. And I've got to ask you, last question, about that journey. A journey in football, but a journey which truly transcends football in deeply inspirational ways. I think anyone that's listened to your story, you cannot help but be inspired. But we need to go back to the beginning again, because it did begin on the muddy fields of Essex as a 5-year-old, jumpers for goalposts, being screamed at by angry, seething parents while playing as the only girl against boys. And knowing what you know now, Casey, what advice do you have if you could go back in time and speak to a 5-year-old Casey Stoney now?
Dream big, work hard, never ever let anyone tell you can't do something, because you absolutely can. And for so many years, I thought it was an impossible dream, that it could ever never become a reality. And I just worked every single day to try and, you know, make myself a better player, but also a better human. I think I'm in this position because of what I've done with my character as well as my ability. You know, I tried to be a good teammate. I tried to do things the right way. I tried to live a professional life even when I wasn't professional. So hard work pays off, and I say that to my players all the time. It's not a coincidence. I wasn't the most talented player in any of my teams. What I did was work hard with what I had. And I kept believing, I kept dreaming, and I was invested into my journey, and I took risks. You know, I took risk when I got offered to be a full-time firefighter in England. I took a risk and I didn't do it because I would have missed out on an Olympics and I would have missed out on a World Cup. And I decided to not take a full-time job. I wanted to be a footballer. And, you know, I remember going down the back of my sofa looking for 20p at times because I couldn't even afford a tin of beans because I didn't get paid and I was struggling for money, but I was doing what I loved every single day. So I kind of felt rich in that way. I would have said to that five-year-old, dream big because it's going to be there and you're going to be able to achieve it. And just keep believing because the game's only going to grow and it's only going to get better. And maybe, just maybe, you can leave a little tiny small footprint on that pathway to making it better.
A little tiny footprint leading out the Great Britain team at Wembley in front of 70,000 fans. A little tiny footprint leading out the San Diego Wave at Snapdragon Stadium on September the 17th. Casey Stoney, I've got to tell you, it is far more than a tiny footprint, but it has been a privilege, an honour, a joy to speak to you. And I just say, Godspeed to your family, to your children, and all at the San Diego Wave.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed it, Roger. Thank you.
And you can catch Casey's San Diego Wave this Saturday as they go to Angel City for the Pacific Coast Highway Derby, a name that's really not caught on in the way we thought it would. That's 10:30 p.m. Eastern on Paramount Plus. That game and so many, many more now streaming on Paramount Plus. Remember, visit paramountplus.com/MIBTWG. That's MIBTWG. And try 1 week of Paramount Plus free on us. Coming up as well tonight, the US women face Jamaica in the second game of World Cup qualifying, 7 p.m. Eastern. That's second out of three. The final game is on Monday at 10 p.m. versus Mexico. All those games available on Paramount Plus as well. We'll be back next week to break down all of this action, catch up on the Euros. But until next time, courage. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Takeoff 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.